Hello. This is the International GCSE English as a Second Language, Paper 2 Listening Test, Summer 2012.
This test is in three parts. You will hear three extracts and will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the beginning of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all three sections twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Part 1. In this part, you will hear the principal of a school welcoming students back at the start of the new term. Listen and complete the notes. Write no more than three words and/or a number for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Good morning, everyone, and a very warm welcome back. I hope you enjoyed your holidays. For those of you who are new, my name is Mr. Jones, and I am the principal of the school. I would like to start the new term with a few notices. First, some news about what has been going on over the holidays. In late July, the Year 9 Joint Geography and History trip set off for Italy. Over 5 days, they took in the sights of ancient Pompeii and climbed the crater of Mount Vesuvius. They sailed to Capri and enjoyed a museum visit in Naples. They even found time to cool off in a local water park and returned home exhausted but enriched by the experience. We had a few sports fixtures over the summer as well. Our cricket team was in splendid form and retained the County Cup by beating our main rival, Hagworth High School. In tennis, we won in all categories in the local school's tournament. The under-13 and under-15 teams both beat Leith Grammar School in their finals. Well done, everyone. We have also started on the new building for the school. The old science block was pulled down over the summer. The physics and chemistry departments have been moved to temporary accommodation behind the library building. The biology department is now on the second floor of South Block. The next phase is to build a two-story building on the old site and, all being well, we will be in there next year. So, looking ahead now to this term. The first thing I would like to do is welcome two new teachers to the school. Miss Woods is our new music teacher who will be taking charge of the junior school orchestra. Mr. Jacobson will be joining the school from his last job in Switzerland, and he will be taking over French. He also has an interest in IT, and he has offered to run the after-school club this year. I hope you will make these new members of staff welcome. Let's now have a look at some of the activities planned for this term. After-school clubs will start in week 2, although football will start in week 4. There are several new clubs to choose from this year, including archery, which will be held on a Monday. Judo will be offered every Wednesday, and Irish dancing with Mrs. Winstone on Thursdays. Several clubs are looking for extra help, so if your parents have expertise in IT, cooking or gardening, and have a few hours to spare, could you ask them to get in touch with the school secretary? We will be putting this information into the school newsletter as well. There are several trips planned for this term, including a music trip to China, a ski trip to France, and geography fieldwork in Scotland. On Thursday in week 3, we will be celebrating European Day, and we would like you to dress in bright colours on that day. But football shirts are not allowed. There will be a special menu on offer in the canteen on that day. We are planning to have a selection of dishes from France and Germany. We are hoping to raise money on that day for the International Children's Fund and its projects in West Africa. So if you would like to make a donation, there will be a collection box in the canteen. Before I close, I would like to remind you that there will be several parents' evenings during this term. Year 7 will have one in September, Year 8 in October, and Years 11 and 12 in November. We will put more details in the school newsletter, which will be available from next week. One last item. After the success of the Breakfast Club last year, we will be running it again. This is for pupils who arrive more than 30 minutes before the start of school. Mrs. Harris and her team will be serving breakfast from 8:10 to 8:30 every morning, and it is open to all students. There will be a choice of cereal, fruit and bread rolls, as well as hot food in the form of eggs, toast and waffles. At £1 a day, it is well worth the money. So, that's a taste of what's happening over the next few weeks. Let's now move on to...
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Good morning, everyone, and a very warm welcome back. I hope you enjoyed your holidays. For those of you who are new, my name is Mr. Jones, and I am the principal of the school. I would like to start the new term with a few notices. First, some news about what has been going on over the holidays. In late July, the Year 9 Joint Geography and History trip set off for Italy. Over 5 days, they took in the sights of ancient Pompeii and climbed the crater of Mount Vesuvius. They sailed to Capri and enjoyed a museum visit in Naples. They even found time to cool off in a local water park and returned home exhausted but enriched by the experience. We had a few sports fixtures over the summer as well. Our cricket team was in splendid form and retained the County Cup by beating our main rival, Hagworth High School. In tennis, we won in all categories in the local school's tournament. The under-13 and under-15 teams both beat Leith Grammar School in their finals. Well done, everyone. We have also started on the new building for the school. The old science block was pulled down over the summer. The physics and chemistry departments have been moved to temporary accommodation behind the library building. The biology department is now on the second floor of South Block. The next phase is to build a two-story building on the old site and, all being well, we will be in there next year. So, looking ahead now to this term. The first thing I would like to do is welcome two new teachers to the school. Miss Woods is our new music teacher, who will be taking charge of the junior school orchestra. Mr. Jacobson will be joining the school from his last job in Switzerland, and he will be taking over French. He also has an interest in IT, and he has offered to run the after-school club this year. I hope you will make these new members of staff welcome. Let's now have a look at some of the activities planned for this term. After-school clubs will start in week 2, although football will start in week 4. There are several new clubs to choose from this year, including archery, which will be held on a Monday. Judo will be offered every Wednesday, and Irish dancing with Mrs. Winstone on Thursdays. Several clubs are looking for extra help, so if your parents have expertise in IT, cooking or gardening, and have a few hours to spare, could you ask them to get in touch with the school secretary? We will be putting this information into the school newsletter as well. There are several trips planned for this term, including a music trip to China, a ski trip to France, and geography fieldwork in Scotland. On Thursday in week 3, we will be celebrating European Day, and we would like you to dress in bright colours on that day. But football shirts are not allowed. There will be a special menu on offer in the canteen on that day. We are planning to have a selection of dishes from France and Germany. We are hoping to raise money on that day for the International Children's Fund and its projects in West Africa. So if you would like to make a donation, there will be a collection box in the canteen. Before I close, I would like to remind you that there will be several parents' evenings during this term. Year 7 will have one in September, Year 8 in October, and Years 11 and 12 in November. We will put more details in the school newsletter, which will be available from next week. One last item. After the success of the Breakfast Club last year, we will be running it again. This is for pupils who arrive more than 30 minutes before the start of school. Mrs. Harris and her team will be serving breakfast from 8:10 to 8:30 every morning, and it is open to all students. There will be a choice of cereal, fruit and bread rolls, as well as hot food in the form of eggs, toast and waffles. At £1 a day, it is well worth the money. So, that's a taste of what's happening over the next few weeks. Let's now move on to...
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part 2. In this part, you will hear a student and his teacher discussing a food technology project. Listen and answer the questions. For questions 11 to 17, indicate your answer by marking the box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and indicate your new answer with a cross. For questions 18 to 20, listen and label the diagram, using the words you hear on the recording. Use no more than one word for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. Ah, hello, Joe. Please come in and sit down.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Roberts.
Now, tell me, how are you getting on with your project? Which one did you choose?
Well, after some thought, I decided to do the one on the peach. I wanted to look at the history, planting and harvesting of peaches. I also wanted to do something on the nutritional value and ways of eating them.
That's quite a lot. Can you talk me through your ideas?
Okay. I found out that the peach originates from China. Later on, it was taken to India, then to present-day Iran, and from there to southern Europe. When the Spanish explorers went to the Americas in the 16th century, they took the peach with them. It wasn't until the 17th century that the peach was brought to England. Peach farming first started in the United States in the 19th century and later on in Canada.
Fine. I think you need to bring this section up to date, with a bit on peach-producing regions of the world today, with details of their share of the market. I believe that China is the leading producer, followed by Italy. Peaches are grown in several other European countries, including Spain, Greece and France. Although the United States is the third largest producer with, I think, 10% of the market.
Okay, I'll add that here.
So, what about the section on planting? You seem to have a lot of notes here.
I have found a lot on this, but I'm finding it hard to decide what to include here.
Well, I would keep it to a couple of paragraphs on which type of soil and climate are best for the peach. The paragraphs on harvesting should be about the same length as the one on planting. Also, what you have found on harvesting so far seems a bit thin and requires more detail.
Do you have any suggestions?
Yes. I think you should give some thought to what happens to the fruit after it is picked. But don't forget that this part isn't the main focus of the project. Now let's have a look at what you've done so far on the food aspects of the peach.
I've done a section on its nutritional value. Peaches are a source of vitamin C, and they are particularly rich in vitamin A, and provide small amounts of vitamin B and E. They are low in sodium and have a high potassium content, which is good for regulating blood pressure.
That's good. And what have you found out about cooking with peaches?
In the past, they were really only used as a dessert, either fresh or canned.
Yes, but today they are so versatile. You can have them on your cereal in the morning or in a salad. They also make great ice cream and jam. You can even grill them and have them with meat or fish. Make sure you include several of these main course recipes rather than focusing on more traditional recipes.
Okay. I found something else out. There are two types of peach, the white and the yellow. White peaches are much sweeter than the yellow ones. I think the yellow ones can have a bit of a sharp taste, actually. The white peach is more popular in Asian countries, but Europeans and North Americans prefer the yellow.
That's a very interesting fact to add to the food section. So let's have a look at the project as a whole.
Well, I think I've found enough for all the sections. I just need to write it up. The history part is more or less done. I've still got a fair bit to do on the harvesting section, and the food one needs a bit more work. I was wondering whether to include a botanical description in the planting section.
Personally, I would give that a miss. It isn't really the main focus of the project. You've got enough already. Really, Joe, this is much further forward than I expected, as I know you struggled with getting your last project for me finished on time. You are so much better organised.
Yes, I won't need to ask for an extension this time.
There is one thing I think you could also add to the project.
Yes?
I see you've got a picture of a cross-section of a peach. I think it would be a good idea to add a few details to it. Say, a line from the centre for the stone. Start from the centre and work out. So then you could have a line for the bit you can eat. why don't you label it yellow or white flesh? And then you could have another line for the skin. I think you need to add that one of the main features of the skin is that it is furry.
Ah, is that one R or two?
Two. F-U-R-R-Y.
Okay, I've got that. So what you think I should really do at the start is...
Now listen a second time and check your answers. Ah, hello, Joe. Please come in and sit down.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Roberts.
Now, tell me, how are you getting on with your project? Which one did you choose?
Well, after some thought, I decided to do the one on the peach. I wanted to look at the history, planting and harvesting of peaches. I also wanted to do something on the nutritional value and ways of eating them.
That's quite a lot. Can you talk me through your ideas?
Okay. I found out that the peach originates from China. Later on, it was taken to India, then to present-day Iran, and from there to southern Europe. When the Spanish explorers went to the Americas in the 16th century, they took the peach with them. It wasn't until the 17th century that the peach was brought to England. Peach farming first started in the United States in the 19th century and later on in Canada.
Fine. I think you need to bring this section up to date, with a bit on peach-producing regions of the world today, with details of their share of the market. I believe that China is the leading producer, followed by Italy. Peaches are grown in several other European countries, including Spain, Greece, and France. Although the United States is the third largest producer with, I think, 10% of the market.
Okay, I'll add that here.
So, what about the section on planting? You seem to have a lot of notes here.
I have found a lot on this, but I'm finding it hard to decide what to include here.
Well, I would keep it to a couple of paragraphs on which type of soil and climate are best for the peach. The paragraphs on harvesting should be about the same length as the one on planting. Also, what you have found on harvesting so far seems a bit thin and requires more detail.
Do you have any suggestions?
Yes. I think you should give some thought to what happens to the fruit after it is picked. But don't forget that this part isn't the main focus of the project. Now let's have a look at what you've done so far on the food aspects of the peach.
I've done a section on its nutritional value. Peaches are a source of vitamin C, and they are particularly rich in vitamin A, and provide small amounts of vitamin B and E. They are low in sodium and have a high potassium content, which is good for regulating blood pressure.
That's good. And what have you found out about cooking with peaches?
In the past, they were really only used as a dessert, either fresh or canned.
Yes, but today they are so versatile. You can have them on your cereal in the morning or in a salad. They also make great ice cream and jam. You can even grill them and have them with meat or fish. Make sure you include several of these main course recipes rather than focusing on more traditional recipes.
Okay. I found something else out. There are two types of peach, the white and the yellow. White peaches are much sweeter than the yellow ones. I think the yellow ones can have a bit of a sharp taste, actually. The white peach is more popular in Asian countries, but Europeans and North Americans prefer the yellow.
That's a very interesting fact to add to the food section. So, let's have a look at the project as a whole.
Well, I think I've found enough for all the sections. I just need to write it up. The history part is more or less done. I've still got a fair bit to do on the harvesting section, and the food one needs a bit more work. I was wondering whether to include a botanical description in the planting section.
Personally, I would give that a miss. It isn't really the main focus of the project. You've got enough already. Really, Joe, this is much further forward than I expected, as I know you struggled with getting your last project for me finished on time. You are so much better organised.
Yes, I won't need to ask for an extension this time.
There is one thing I think you could also add to the project.
Yes?
I see you've got a picture of a cross-section of a peach. I think it would be a good idea to add a few details to it. Say, a line from the centre for the stone. Start from the centre and work out. So then you could have a line for the bit you can eat. Why don't you label it yellow or white flesh? And then you could have another line for the skin. I think you need to add that one of the main features of the skin is that it is furry.
Ah, is that one R or two?
Two. F-U-R-R-Y.
OK, I've got that. So what you think I should really do at the start is...
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear a talk on an animal, the fox, which often lives in cities as well as the countryside. Listen and complete the sentences. Write no more than four words for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Good afternoon. Today, I am going to give you a brief introduction to a wild animal which has managed to adapt successfully to living in cities. This is the urban fox, which has become a common sight in many cities throughout the world. The foxes you see in the city are the same as the ones you see in the countryside. They are slender in appearance, with pointed ears and a bushy tail. The coat is generally red in colour, although the back of the ears and the front of the legs are black, and the belly varies from white to grey. From a distance, they may seem quite large, but in fact, they are about the size of the average adult cat. Foxes have successfully colonised urban areas throughout the world. They are widespread in many cities in Australia, Japan, North America, and Europe. In Zurich, in Switzerland, urban foxes only started to appear in the 1980s, whereas in Britain, foxes first became established in cities such as Bristol and London during the 1940s. More recently, cities such as Cambridge and Norwich have recorded foxes living there too. The main reason why foxes can be found in some cities is that cities have expanded into the fox's territory, and they have come into closer contact with humans. The process has been made easier in places where people build houses with medium-sized gardens, which provide foxes with places to live and sources of food. In fact, the population of foxes in cities is higher in those with medium-sized gardens. There are far fewer urban foxes in industrial cities and in ones with modern housing with small back gardens. Wherever foxes live, they have three basic requirements. The first is safety. Foxes live in earths or dens. In the countryside, these could be a tunnel in a bank or between tree roots. For urban foxes, a suitable habitat could be in an overgrown garden or under a garden shed. School grounds are attractive, and most of them have foxes living there for a very good reason. For much of the time, the place is empty. A second requirement is water, as it is to all of us. The third requirement is food. Foxes are omnivorous, which means they will eat anything. Their diet depends very much on the food that is available in the areas where they live. A fox's diet varies according to the season. In nature, foxes eat more earthworms and birds in spring and early summer, more mammals in winter, and depend more on insects in summer and fruit in autumn. However, for an urban fox, another useful source of food is people's dustbins, although foxes do not get as much food from dustbins as you would think. Newspapers and magazines often show photographs of a dustbin lying on its side with a fox going through the rubbish as if it had knocked the bin over itself. In fact, foxes are far too small to knock over a bin. Instead, they jump up and knock the lid off, and then jump into the upright bin. Also, foxes are often blamed for spreading rubbish around gardens and streets when other animals such as badgers, cats, and dogs could also be responsible. It might be a surprise for you to learn that in a recent survey of 4,000 households in Britain, it was found that 10% of residents regularly feed foxes. It was also discovered that about 66% like urban foxes, 26% are indifferent to them, and that only about 8% dislike them. In fact, in another survey, foxes were voted one of the most popular mammals in Britain. If you want to encourage foxes to visit your garden, there is no reason why you shouldn't feed them. Once a fox learns that it can find food on a regular basis, it will visit your garden regularly. However, foxes should never be fed by hand or overfed. Tame foxes learn to approach any person and can even try to enter houses through a cat flap or an open door. This could be frightening for many people. If you don't want foxes in your garden, there are a few steps you can take. To stop them living in the garden, tidy up overgrown areas and block up holes around the house and shed with strong materials such as stones and bricks. You should also put all rubbish in the bin and not beside it. You can even use a strong elastic strap on your dustbin to stop foxes from knocking off the lid.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Good afternoon. Today, I am going to give you a brief introduction to a wild animal which has managed to adapt successfully to living in cities. This is the urban fox, which has become a common sight in many cities throughout the world. The foxes you see in the city are the same as the ones you see in the countryside. They are slender in appearance, with pointed ears and a bushy tail. The coat is generally red in colour, although the back of the ears and the front of the legs are black, and the belly varies from white to grey. From a distance, they may seem quite large, but in fact, they are about the size of the average adult cat. Foxes have successfully colonised urban areas throughout the world. They are widespread in many cities in Australia, Japan, North America, and Europe. In Zurich, in Switzerland, urban foxes only started to appear in the 1980s, whereas in Britain, foxes first became established in cities such as Bristol and London during the 1940s. More recently, cities such as Cambridge and Norwich have recorded foxes living there too. The main reason why foxes can be found in some cities is that cities have expanded into the fox's territory, and they have come into closer contact with humans. The process has been made easier in places where people build houses with medium-sized gardens, which provide foxes with places to live and sources of food. In fact, the population of foxes in cities is higher in those with medium-sized gardens. There are far fewer urban foxes in industrial cities and in ones with modern housing with small back gardens. Wherever foxes live, they have three basic requirements. The first is safety. Foxes live in earths or dens. In the countryside, these could be a tunnel in a bank or between tree roots. For urban foxes, a suitable habitat could be in an overgrown garden or under a garden shed. School grounds are attractive, and most of them have foxes living there for a very good reason. For much of the time, the place is empty. A second requirement is water, as it is to all of us. The third requirement is food. Foxes are omnivorous, which means they will eat anything. Their diet depends very much on the food that is available in the areas where they live. A fox's diet varies according to the season. In nature, foxes eat more earthworms and birds in spring and early summer, more mammals in winter, and depend more on insects in summer and fruit in autumn. However, for an urban fox, another useful source of food is people's dustbins, although foxes do not get as much food from dustbins as you would think. Newspapers and magazines often show photographs of a dustbin lying on its side with a fox going through the rubbish as if it had knocked the bin over itself. In fact, foxes are far too small to knock over a bin. Instead, they jump up and knock the lid off and then jump into the upright bin. Also, foxes are often blamed for spreading rubbish around gardens and streets when other animals such as badgers, cats, and dogs could also be responsible. It might be a surprise for you to learn that in a recent survey of 4,000 households in Britain, it was found that 10% of residents regularly feed foxes. It was also discovered that about 66% like urban foxes, 26% are indifferent to them, and that only about 8% dislike them. In fact, in another survey, foxes were voted one of the most popular mammals in Britain. If you want to encourage foxes to visit your garden, there is no reason why you shouldn't feed them. Once a fox learns that it can find food on a regular basis, it will visit your garden regularly. However, foxes should never be fed by hand or overfed. Tame foxes learn to approach any person and can even try to enter houses through a cat flap or an open door. This could be frightening for many people. If you don't want foxes in your garden, there are a few steps you can take. To stop them living in the garden, tidy up overgrown areas and block up holes around the house and shed with strong materials such as stones and bricks. You should also put all rubbish in the bin and not beside it. You can even use a strong elastic strap on your dustbin to stop foxes from knocking off the lid.
That's the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklets to be collected. Thank you and good luck.